I'm going to specifically be answering questions that were from the index cards, but there were a lot of questions on index cards in regards to tachbulas and what we could do to battle our Yetzirah. So I think this will help with that. I hope this will help with that. You know, we tend to look at the halachos of all the restrictions that that Hashem gives us in the areas of Taivas Nashim, and it almost seems like Hashem is trying to find the most creative way to torture us, and He gives us this tremendous taiva, and it's don't look, don't listen, don't smell, don't touch, all these halachas, just that are very, very restrictive and torturous, and we tend to think that that's really what Hashem was doing to us. Like, you know, there are just certain areas of Yiddishkeit that are just unpleasant. You know, we got to fast on Yom Kippur, and we have to control our Yetzirah. You know, they sort of fall in the same category. And I think the fact that we tend to view it that way makes it much harder for us to deal with it. I think it's important to realize that that's not the reality. And I brought the Gemara to show you that it's really there, but I didn't have time to find it. There's a Gemara in Nida that asks, why is it that the Bris Mila is on the eighth day? And apparently there's some, based on some comparison from Bris Mila, no, from Karbanos, it should have been on the seventh day. And the Gemara wants to know, why is Bris Mila on the eighth day, not on the seventh day? And the Gemara says that the reason why Bris Mila is on the eighth day and not the seventh day is Shelo Tehei Imo Va'aviv Atzevim V'Kulam Samechim, because Hashem didn't want that at the Bris Mila that the parents should be sad and everybody else should be besimcha. So Rashi explains, why is it that everybody else is besimcha and they're sad? Because the halacha is that a woman, after she gives birth to a zachar, is tamei for 7 days. If the bris mila would be on the seventh day, she would still be usher to her husband at the bris mila. She's going to end up being mutter that night, the night of the eighth day. And Hashem didn't want that to detract from the simcha. The husband and wife who are making the this party of the Bris Mila are going to be detracted in their simcha because they're looking out at the crowd, everybody who came to have bagels, lox at the Bris Mila, everybody else is enjoying themselves, and they're lacking in their simcha because they know that they're usher to each other. Now let's just put this in perspective for a moment. They're middle of the Suda, the Bris Mila. They just had a baby, they're in a pretty good mood. She's going to be mutter that night. They're not getting together anyways at the Bris Mila. They don't even know anyone else's status. Maybe there are plenty of other people out there that came to the Bris Mila who were also usher to their spouses. So I can't imagine that the detraction of the simcha is really that significant. But Hashem says, no, that's a detraction from the simcha that I'm sensitive to, and therefore, what am I going to do? I'm going to push off the Bris Mila of Argan's Klal Yisrael Dori Doros, so that there could be a little bit more simcha. Now, keep in mind that if you don't do a Bris Mila at the time that you're supposed to do the Bris Mila, you chayiv karis. You push off Bris Mila one day, there's a chayiv karis. Bris Mila is docha Shabbos. To have the Bris Mila b'sman is docha Shabbos. As far as I know, the only mitzvahs that are Docha Shabbos is, right, it was in say dochlos, I say was bris milah and the avoda. Because I don't know, there aren't too many mitzvahs that are docha Shabbos. So here we have Hashem telling us to go years and years and years controlling ourselves, and he's ready to turn over one of the most important halachas in the Torah and let everybody push off the bris milah by a day because there's a slight detraction in the simcha that this couple who's married already and will be mutter anyways tonight shouldn't be lacking a little bit in their simcha during the bris milah. So apparently Hashem really is quite sensitive in these areas. And yet he does this to us, where for years and years we have to, he seems to be quite insensitive. So Lahori is not being insensitive. And the reality is that following these halachos will set us up for success at Simchas HaChaim in this area itself. I remember hearing from Dr. Goldman saying that Talmidei Chachamim, people who have a strong commitment to Shmiras and Mitzvahs and following Halacha, end up being the ones that have the most enjoyable physical intimate life. Because Hashem wants that to exist. We say, Ish v'Isha, Shalom b'neihem, the Shechina Shriya b'neihem. This is part of what it's talking about. And Hashem wants that relationship to be there. And when it's done, al pi halacha, it ends up being a much more pleasant, effective, and enjoyable relationship. You see in the Velt that they're not enjoying themselves. And I can't, I apologize, but I can't help but notice every time I go to Publix, you see the same magazine every month in the checkout section over there, where they have a new 30 tips every month on how to improve your shalom bias. Now, when I see that, and it's the same people buying it every month, they're spending millions of dollars on advertising and knowing exactly what to put on the cover so people buy their magazine, and they're catering to the same people every month. But what they're realizing is that these people need another 30 tips every month. Now, everything's mutter to them. They could do whatever they want, but they don't know what to do. And they're not obviously not enjoying themselves if they need to buy that same magazine every month to get another 30 tips. So what's pshat? How does it work? It's really true with Kol Torah Kula. There's a concept of histakel baraisa bar alma, which means that Hashem looks at the Torah, and Hashem looked at the Torah, and Hashem created the world. The Torah was the blueprint of creation. Which means, I'll give you a few examples. You know, there's a halach in the Torah that if an animal is an avela, if an animal is a trefa, that it's not kosher even if it's shechted properly. What does it mean that it's a trefa? So let's say it has a hole in its lung. Any wound which is going to make it die within a year makes it into a trefa. So Hashem sees that halach in the Torah, and Hashem says, okay, so now I'm going to create a cow, and I'm going to create it in a way that if it has a hole in its lung, it's going to die within a year. But if it has a hole in its foot, it's going to live. So Hashem creates the cow's body to be in line with the halachas of the Torah. It's the same thing with midos. Let's say it's, you know, there's a halach in the Torah of kibud av v'aim. So Hashem creates the family structure that people will be much better off if they're mechaber their parents. There's a halacha of don't steal. So Hashem creates a society that people will be much better off and be able to get along with each other and live a much more pleasant life. They don't steal from each other. It's not like that with the rest of the animal kingdom. You watch Errol feeding the birds in the back, and you see one seagull just rip a piece of bread out of the other seagull's mouth, and, you know, 5 seconds later, they're flying around like they're best friends. They don't really seem mad at each other because one ripped food out of the other one's mouth. If that happened at the breakfast table, that a guy put a piece of toast in his mouth and the other guy bent over, ripped it out of his mouth and put it into his mouth, I suspect that would affect their relationship a little bit more than it does by the seagulls, because Hashem has that's a slak of a rice of our alma. And it's true by all aspects of the Torah. We don't see it so obviously by everything. These are situations where we could see it. There's a enough examples. But that's the idea of Estak HaBarayis HaBar Alma. And it's the same thing when it comes to this. And I think if we understand a little bit better the ideas, the halachas of tznius and restriction, we could see how following these halachas will be setting us up better for life. There's a medrash in Parshas Truma, in the Yalkut Shmoni, that discusses why is it, tries to explain why is it that Hashem gave us the Mishkan. Now, in general, I think the most simplistic way that people understand the halachas of tznius is that's lifneiver. If a woman walks around like a prude, so she's being over lifneiver. And that's why we have a lot of the halachas of tznius, which bothers girls. Why do I have to dress like a tznua just because the guys are animals? So it's hard to get a girl to dress in a tzniusdik way because you're trying to convince her not to be over the Israel of Ne'iver. But I think that is the most simplistic and probably popular understanding of the halacha of tznius, and it's true. But if you just work with that, this medrash is pretty much impossible to understand. So the medrash says, you can interrupt me if I want. I don't want to speak for 45 minutes.
Isn't it also din in her that she's dressing like an animal? Actually, because the guys are animals.
Okay, let's see. We'll get a better understanding. Let's see if we could explain this medrash over here. Moshel l'melech. Again, the medrash is explaining why Hashem gave us a mishkan. It says, Moshel l'melech, shehoyse lo bas ketana. It's moshel to a king that has a young daughter. Achelo higdilo abas alidei simonim. Before she was a gedola and had simone godless, hayero sabashok medabrima, vos medabrima. He would see her outside in the alleyways, in the marketplace, and he would shmooze with her. Kivan shigdilo abas alidei simonim. Once she got older and developed simonim of being an adult, Amar, he said, in kvoda shalbiti shehi medabri imam of harhesya. He said, it's no longer the proper covenant for my daughter that I should be speaking to her publicly. Ella, asuli apulin shehi medabri imam, I'll make her a special palace. I think that's a translation. Yeah, okay. So I'm going to make her a private, special private place that I could speak to her. Kach sotu. Betchila, in the beginning, kinar Yisrael, when Klal Yisrael was young, va'aveu, and Hashem loved them, b'mitzrayim, ro also, v'avarit beris mitzrayim. Bayom, ro also, v'yar Yisrael siyara gdola. B'sinai, ro also, panam dabar Hashem achem. So when the relationship with Klal Yisrael and Hashem was in its young stages, so Hashem showed himself to Klal Yisrael publicly, Mitzrayim and Kriyas Yamsuf and Har Sinai. Kivan Shekivlu is the Torah, but once Klal Yisrael was Mekabel the Torah, Venasla Umo Shalemo, they became an Umo Shalemo. Omar, he said, in Kvodam Shal B'nei Adam, Shehim Medaber Yimam Farhesir. It's no longer the proper kavod for these people that I should be speaking to them publicly. Ella, rather, v'osli mikdash v'shachanti b'socham. Rather, Hashem says, I'm going to make a mikdash and I'm going to dwell amongst them. So Parshat Shat is Medrash's Peldik. We all understand that you know, the little girl becomes a princess. She no longer belongs in public view. Now, okay, she's got to be inside. But what does this have to do with Hashem exposing himself publicly to Klal Yisrael? And now he says, no, I'm only going to speak to you privately in the Mishkan. Parshat Shat in Tznius, you can't make any sense out of this medrash. Hashem is not being overly naive on anybody by exposing himself publicly and therefore needing a Mishkan. So the horror of Shad is that there's a concept of Tznius that we have, that things that are precious, things that are meaningful to us, we keep private. And we like to keep it private. I'll give you an example. You have your... If your mother came down to Florida to visit, and you were standing outside in front of the yeshiva with all your friends, and your mother, who misses you so much, comes running over and gives you a big kiss. I don't know everybody, but most people would be somewhat uncomfortable with that. Why? I should be embarrassed that my mother loves me?
Sense. This is logical.
You have to be immature to be okay with your friends knowing that your mother loves you. You have to be mature to...
Yeah, as immature. People don't like... I mean, yeah.
Why is that the immaturity?
Why is
you have to be immature.
Who creates the norms of maturity?
Yeah, because it's weird. It's weird.
I'm saying if Rabbi Nyman was standing in the parking lot and his mother came in from New York in front of all the Talmidim, she walks over and gives him a big hug. Do you think he'd be comfortable with that?
He would only not be comfortable because it's not,
they're not allowed to, they shouldn't know that his mother, there's something wrong with his mother loving him. Like what's uncomfortable
in front of the Talmidim, he's supposed to look very chashuv. Doesn't look so chashuv to do that.
I mean, it's more chashuv if your mother doesn't love you.
Your mom doesn't walk up in front of you and give you a big kiss.
So what's pshat? I agree.
It looks like it's like, I don't know, maybe...
Show of affection is
a childish.
Because pshat, it's childish for your mother to love you. Pshat is, so you're right, it is, there is a pastish there, but the pastish is the midah of tznius. The midah of tznius is that something that's precious is kept private. I remember when I was learning in Chavetz Chaim in Eretz Yisrael, so the whole year it was Rabbi Chait and Rabbi Knarik, who were sitting on the Mizrachban, faced the rest of the Beis Medrash. The Yom and the Ram, they turned around and they faced forward. So I remember I asked, what's pshat? So Rabbi Chait said, once a year, I don't need to be on display. I assume what he meant was this concept that it's the Yom Ram davening, he's connecting with Hashem on a deeper level, and he's uncomfortable with people looking at him and noticing that I'm connecting with Hashem, you mind your own business. Let's say somebody was having a very meaningful Shmona Esrei, and it was really getting into Shmona Esrei, and he actually started crying. Would he be comfortable if the people around him are noticing that?
It's not manly.
You're a wimp.
Women totally don't mind. Okay, I decided.
Okay, I'll tell you pshat in that. That's pshat. that's because when they're crying, they're not expressing the same level of emotion as you, because they cry much more easily.
Okay.
If you were in a room by yourself, you wouldn't mind, you wouldn't be embarrassed.
What does that mean? It's not manly. What does that mean?
Because I'm immature. It's not manly. Because
you're immature.
It's wimpy and girly.
It's
the same immaturity. It's just
a sign. So why if you're in a room by yourself?
I don't think... That could be it, but I think that even someone who's mature would be uncomfortable with that. What's Chad? I think it's the same thing, that I'm in the middle of it, my deep, close connection with Hashem. It's none of your business. And stop looking at me. It's something. It becomes something private.
Isn't it fact, you know, I want people to see me, Gaiva, you know, like it's...
Yes, it is. When the look on your face is not really a reflection of your emotions, then you want people to look at you.
Mark.
It happens to be, I think it's often an indication that people who are... This is my Chavetz Chaim brainwashed Hashkafa. That people who are wearing their frumkeit on their sleeve and are very comfortable with everybody seeing it is very often an indication that there's no real emotion involved over there, because otherwise they probably would be uncomfortable. And the people who are comfortable with their mother coming over to them in public and giving them a kiss is probably because their mother is one of the real kissy type and kisses them like 15 times a day, and the kiss became meaningless, so they don't care anymore. And it's no longer a show of any deep affection. That's beside on the guy who wants you to see. And Lachora, that's beside on the Medrash over here. I mean, you see it all the time. You have Gedolim that are uncomfortable with people knowing about their Chumras. What's beside? I think that this is beside, because I'm uncomfortable putting on display.
Isn't it
a
Nova? Or is that the same thing?
No, I don't think it's the same thing as a Nova. What's the Pasuk Mashem Sholimach Kirim Yiras Hashem the Avas Chesed? What? That's Ne'alachas Mashem Lekach. That was the part of the Pasuk I was trying to get to anyways. What's so important about Hatznei Alechus? If Hatznei Alechus means that I shouldn't wear shorts when I'm jogging, why does it make it into that pasuk of this is what Hashem, you know, like this is what it's all about? That is because Hatznei Alechus, when your Avodas Hashem is coming with Hatznei Alechus, that's a simon as to what kind of level your Avodas Hashem is really at, because otherwise it wouldn't call for tznius.
What about
Anova? Where does Anova say? Anova may have some of the same symptoms, but that doesn't mean it's the same Hargasha. Okay.
You're bringing Raya's. I don't understand the Havana. Why is it special? Should it be kept private? You have a lot of Raya's. It's a good Raya's.
Why should it be? Why?
Why is the Mitzvah said it is that way? Why if it's special is it different private?
You want to know why people feel that way?
Why is there a proper...
But would you mask him that you feel that way? But you want to know why Hashem created us to want to keep our deep emotions private?
Yeah, why is something special?
I'm not sure.
No, he's asking why Hashem did it. He's asking...
Why is
that the Yashrus? He's asking why there's a mechanics.
We have a Sargash. Well,
we know that we have this Teva.
Right, but we have Tevas that are bad and Tevas that are good. So what makes this fall into the Teva of right? I might have a Teva of Chesed, and I might have a Teva to whack someone over the head, but what decides which one's good, which one's bad? What makes this one go into the good bin?
Why would it be bad?
I'm saying...
Why would it be good?
I'm saying... You see,
I'm trying to convince someone of this, that something that's special should be kept private.
Why is that? Why is that?
What's the reason? What would be the reason?
Everybody believes this to a certain extent, and it's the question where they draw the line. Why is it? Explain. Why is it that even in the secular world, at least in most circles, adultery would be a marriage breaker? What's the big deal? Why can't, you know? Yeah, we're married. We'll take care of each other. We'll raise a family. We'll live together. But once in a while, you know, you have your night out. I'll have my night out. What's the big deal?
They have that.
I know. I said in most circles.
Because open marriage is like a totally thing.
I understand. It does go on in some circles. But in most circles, it's understood that that would be called cheating. And that you can't do your thing. And that's, why not? What's the big deal? Because it's understood that in order for the relationship to be something special, at least that has to be exclusive. That has to be private. Now, we draw the line somewhere else. Different people draw, you know, this guy, you know, he's okay with people hugging his wife and kissing his wife and dancing with his wife, as long as you don't go further with that. This one's okay, just don't dance with her, but, you know, and you, but you could just look at her. And we draw the line in different places. Drawing the line in a different place enables the relationship and the physical relationship to be much more precious. I must have said this mashal. I'm sure some of you heard it. It's my favorite mashal. You have a guy and a girl who married. They both had their history in high school. He was involved with girls. She was involved with guys. They know each other's history, okay, but we're the right ones for each other, and we're going to get married. We're done with all our previous relationships. So the guy's in Kollel. He's in college, whatever, depending on which crowd you're talking to. And finances are tight. He comes to the first anniversary, and he doesn't have money for an anniversary present, but he really wants to give his wife an anniversary present. They had such a wonderful Shana Rishona, and he wants to give her an anniversary present. But he can't afford anything. So he remembers that he has this necklace. This old necklace. He has this old necklace. He brings it to the jeweler, gets it polished up, and looks brand new. And he gives it to his wife. His wife is all happy. Wow, where'd you get the money for this? Don't worry. You're very special to me. I got this under control. Here's your anniversary present. So she's, you know, she loves her necklace. She goes to shul with it that Shabbos, and she sees her old friend keeps on staring at her. After davening, she comes over and says, "You know, I remember that necklace. Back in the day in high school, your husband gave it to me, and when we broke up, I gave it back to him." So how's she gonna feel? Probably not too good. Why? What's the big deal? What's this necklace? This necklace was a gift, which was a physical expression of the love that her husband had for her. As soon as she realizes that he used the same necklace to express his love to somebody else, the necklace is no longer special to her. Okay, maybe it's a little bit different because he could have gotten a different necklace. Okay, you could say as far as the chalik. But the yisod is there. That the more something is used, the more something is out there for the public, the less precious it becomes. That is our teva. You want to argue if it's a good midah or a bad midah? L'chora, it's a good midah, because otherwise Hashem wouldn't say that Hatznei Alechus is so important to him. L'chora, it's a good midah. What exactly pshat is? Why is it a good midah? What's the Yasha Shabbat? I don't know. We'll have to think about that. But that is our teva, and that is the way we're supposed to. That's the way we're supposed to live. So when our relationship is exclusive, when the woman's body is exclusive and it's not out there for the public's viewing or usage or whatever extent it's out there, then it enables her to physically express her love in a much, much more meaningful way. Now, I think we could take this a step further. I mean, getting back to the Medrash, that's really what's going on over here. Hashem is talking about his relationship with Klal Yisrael and how much he's in love with Klal Yisrael, and he no longer feels that demonstration of his connecting with Klal Yisrael could be done in public. And he says, therefore, we need a Mishkan. It's time you see how much Hashem is in love with Klal Yisrael. How many relationships do we have that we're uncomfortable about in public? How often do we feel like we don't want people looking at us while we're davening Shmona Esrei? We feel that way sometimes, I guess, because we don't want people to notice how little kavanah we're having. But other than that, I mean, so you see, if only we could dehera how much Hashem is in love with us, that He has such level of hargosha and reciprocate those feelings, we'd be pretty in pretty good shape in our avodas Hashem. But l'chora, that's shot over here, and that's the dimyon to this woman, this young girl who becomes a woman, now belongs inside. Hashem says, now I belong inside with you, Kal Yisrael. L'chora, that would make the dimyon over here make sense. But I think we could take this a step further. People often ask that why is it that we need to go through so many years of restriction? I don't know. Let Hashem flip the taiva switch when I'm 24. My rabbi tells me to start dating. Why does it have to be there from so young? What's Hashem trying to do to me by giving me this pressure and this temptation, this Yetzirah, for so many years? So obviously we can't darshan time in the Krah. And it's hard to really explain it, but I'll share with you something that I heard from Rabbi Trapper. I don't think it was to answer this question, but I think it very much helps to answer this question. You know, we talk about love all the time. How do you develop love? Anybody? You give. Okay, good. Loving 101. If you want to develop a relationship, you give. So how is it you have a couple that dates, I don't know, depending on how yeshivish you are, I don't know, 2 times, 3 times, 4 times, 5 times, 10 times, 15 times, I don't know, whatever it is, and they're ready to get married. And they're convinced, they're quite sure, they're in love. What'd they do for each other already? Okay, he paid for her drinks, he opened the car door for her. Yeah, okay, whatever, you know. So, what? So, right, if that's how you develop love, so how much love could have been developed there? Well, you have to say that there's a certain level of infatuation. Now, infatuation doesn't, I mean, we need it. Otherwise, we never get married. So, you know, Hashem did us a chesed of giving us that illogical stage. But that doesn't last forever. So what happens when the infatuation is gone? How long is it going to last for already? So what happens when it's gone? If the love didn't kick in yet, you're in trouble. If the love kicked in, then you're in pretty good shape. So if the way you develop love is by giving, if the hair, the beauty of what Hashem set up for us. Hashem set up for us a tremendous, tremendous need. He gave us this tremendous taiva. Now, women don't have that same kind of taiva. But they have other needs. And women have much more emotional needs. Now, Hashem made it that they work very well with each other. Because a woman is interested in the physical relationship, not because, you know, she sees her husband's six-pack. It's because she gets taken care of emotionally. And that makes her want to express her love physically. So here Hashem set up a system where if you're ready to follow halacha, you have a tremendous motivation to give. I'm not saying that this is all selfish, but there's incentives help. And the husband has a tremendous motivation to give, because Hashem created with him with a tremendous taiva. The way that he's going to get his wife involved, being interested in being involved, is by taking care of her. What does he have to do? He has to take care of her emotional needs. It's not so easy. He has to help her out. She had a long, hard day at work, and he has to sit down on the couch and schmooze with her and hear how it was what it was like, and then go for a walk and take her out to eat and help with the dishes. And if he's lucky, then he will have taken care of her emotional needs enough, and she's going to respond by being physically affectionate. He's going to feel very well taken care of. She's going to feel very well taken care of, and they're actually going to start loving each other. And as they continue giving, they continue loving, they start giving because they're actually loving and not just because that incentive. And the love grows and grows and grows. And by the time the infatuation is going away, the love has kicked in. And even though they're no longer infatuated with each other, but they actually love each other. And as a result of them loving each other, the physical relationship grew from just being an infatuation to actual expression of love. And as a result, if they keep up this cycle, they love each other, so they give more, so they love more, so they give more, so they love more, and the love grows and grows and grows. And by the time the couple is married for 10, 15, 20, 30 years, the love should be exploding. And even though she looks very different, and he's been with her many, many times already, but the level of love keeps on growing. And if the level of love keeps on growing, then they want to express their love physically as well. And as a result, the physical relationship will stay fresh because it's a result of the love. But it takes a lot of effort. And if a person is not restricted by his commitment to halacha, then he doesn't take advantage of those early opportunities to give, because he doesn't need her. He has his own hands. He has his computer. He has his secretary, whatever it is. He has his other opportunities because he's not restricted by halacha. And when his wife is kvetchy, it's like, all right, dear, I'm going to be home late from work tonight. And she goes to sleep kvetchy. He doesn't take care of her. He doesn't get from her because he's not following halacha. He's not restricted by halacha. And he doesn't have that incentive. And the relationship doesn't grow. And the love doesn't form. And in 6 months, when the infatuation is gone, he's going to Publix and trying to figure out a new 30 tricks because there's no love. So why else should he be together with her? Now, what I heard was is that this takes a lot of training. If a person would just become a Baal Taiva when he's 23 and a half and ready to start dating, he didn't go through his 10 plus years of training. It's not going to work. When a person goes through those years of training, of learning how to be in control of his Yetzirah, of not needing that instant gratification, so then when he's married and needs to exercise that control in order to have this setup where he's motivated to give, and then he'll receive and she'll receive and they'll start loving each other and they'll actually want to be physically together with each other when the infatuation is gone because they actually love each other. If a person didn't go through that training ground, it's going to be very, very difficult. And he may not be able to wait. He likely won't be able to wait. He didn't wait his whole life. He's not going to be able to wait. For the last 10 years, he's just been giving in to his temptation instantly. Now you expect him to wait till tomorrow, till she's in a better mood. You expect him to wait a few hours and have the patience to listen to her and take care of her. What? Pas Basal was a cheshbin, and it helps. But if his teva for the last 10 years is that whenever he was tempted, within 5 minutes he was satisfying his temptation. So it's going to be very, very difficult for him to do that. What's the pas basalo? If the only way to get the pas is you gotta start taking out the flour and the water and eat it and make the bread, you could still get pretty hungry, and you may not have patience for the bread to come out of the oven. That's what he's been doing his whole life. He's never been exercising self-control. How's he going to have self-control now? She had a really rough day at work, and she's not in the mood today, and you're going to have to wait till tomorrow. So what's going to happen? You're not ready to wait till tomorrow. You never waited till tomorrow your whole life. So what's going
to
happen?
Because well, you have nothing to wait for. I mean, now you know it's going to be hard work. But...
Okay. It's a cheshbon, and it's helpful, but it's not so positive. That's not what the guy was doing his whole life. So what's he waiting for? I have other ways that I don't need to wait. Right? So, okay, you're right. If he's committed to halacha to that extent that, you know, pas basala helps him, then that'll also be helpful. But lemaisa, the yesod is like this, that Hashem set us up for success. Hashem is very sensitive to us being able to enjoy ourselves in this area. Hashem wants us to enjoy ourselves in this area at the right time. And the halachas of tznius, the halachas of restriction, enable that relationship to be much, much more precious. Our years of going through the exercising, the self-control, will enable us to live a life of real love, of real relationship, of real meaningful relationship, where we'll be motivated and interested in expressing our love physically as a expression of our love, not just that out of expression of lust, which is the way to really enjoy it. And then you see in the Velt, it's not going on. Their physical relationships are not a result of love, because the love never developed, because they never were really giving to each other. They were taking care of themselves. They were never really giving to each other. And therefore, their relationships never really developed into a loving relationship. And the physical relationship is still all about lust. And when it's all about lust, they need those extra 30 tips, and they're not enjoying themselves. And what we have to hear is that it's very kedai, it's very worth it. Hashem is not trying to torture us, and particularly in the Inyan itself, that we're battling a Yetzirah and we're so tempted to enjoy ourselves, the more we follow halacha and the more we stick to the Ratzon and Hashem, the more we'll be able to enjoy what Hashem really wants us to enjoy. Everybody say, have a